G. PDFs and MP3s of this program are free of charge. Just call us 1-800-444-1977. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Marston.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
From the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California, this is Flashpoints. Today on our show, we devote the entire hour to Haiti. First up, we speak with Haitian activist Jean Sainville in Ottawa, Canada, about the role and culpability of the so-called core group in Haiti. Then we feature another clandestine interview from the heart of Haiti's capital, Port-au-Prince. I'm Kevin Pina, and we'll be right back with that and more here on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And welcome back to another edition of Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, yesterday, James B. Foley, who was the former U.S. ambassador to Haiti from 2003 to 2005, really supported, backed, oversaw that coup d'etat against a democratically elected government of Jean-Bertrand d'Aristide. Well, James B. Foley has reared his ugly head again yesterday in the Washington Post and the Miami Herald, asking Trump for another U.S. military intervention with U.S. Marine boots on the ground to be followed by U.S. military contractors. Some of you might know I'm the editor of the Haiti Information Project. We are an online news agency. We aggregate news, but most of our news comes from citizen journalists on the ground in Haiti. And as such, I felt obligated to write a response to Mr. Foley. And here's my editorial for the Haiti Information Project. If there is such a thing as the worst of a bad policy in Haiti, it's embodied in the person of James B. Foley and his tenure as U.S. ambassador from 2003 to 2005. As a staunch backer of the 2004 coup and the corrupt oligarchy it maintained in power, Foley has already bloodied his hands by overseeing policies that brought Haiti to its current miserable situation. Now he wants Trump to double down on this previous fiasco in Haiti with another U.S. military intervention. With the U.S. economy in a tailspin and ongoing operations underway against gangs by an already controversial alliance of the Haitian police and the Kenyan police, the U.S. can ill afford deeper military involvement, whether that be U.S. troops on the ground or paying for hired U.S. mercenaries, as Foley also proposes. What Haiti needs is a real commitment by Trump to stop the flow of illegal weapons from the U.S. to the gangs and more interdiction of craft by the U.S. Coast Guard carrying these weapons to Haiti's shores. Foley's proposed solution for, quote, a small U.S. contingent which, after freeing key infrastructure in Port-au-Prince from gang control, could rapidly give way to private military contractors, unquote, is as unrealistic as it is ridiculous. Rather than a way forward, this represents more of the backward interventionist thinking of the George W. Bush administration that unnecessarily squandered so many resources and innumerable lives in Haiti. By nurturing and backing the 2004 coup, the likes of Foley accepted the destruction of Haiti's democratic institutions in exchange for decades of instability and corruption that followed bringing this proud nation to its knees. Hopefully, Foley's ridiculous suggestions are the last we'll hear from this dying clique of interventionist sycophants in the foreseeable future. They've already done enough to help Haiti. And that was my editorial in the Haiti Information Project. Let's take a short music break. When we get back, we're going to start today's program with my first guest, John St. Ville. He's going to speak to us from Ottawa, Canada. And we're going to talk about the core group and the possibility of U.S. intervention and what is going on exactly on the ground in Haiti. Stay tuned for that and more here on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Woo! Vincent, le protestataire. Takou tousse, takou kapwa, takou desaline. En avant! Résistance! 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 Faut qu'à faire résistance! 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 Faut qu'à faire résistance!
Sinon, ils perdent tout le monde blio. Résister! Sinon, l'amour, faut qu'on joue le monde pour la persister! Si tout le bagaille pas qu'à marcher, nous voulons pour avancer! Et si l'ennemi en flot tombe, chaque jour faire résistance!
Résistance! Résistance! Résistance! Faut qu'à faire résistance! 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 Faut qu'à faire résistance!
Malgré kidnapping, la vie chez nous qui est fiel vrai! Gaz tourné, cocaïne, nous était bois croisé. Si femme a faute pour femme, nous Satan vrai. Tout une garçon qu'on calile, c'est yon commenté.
Résistance, résistance.
And welcome back to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're continuing our drumbeat coverage of the situation in Haiti today. We're devoting the entire hour to it. My first guest here is Jean St. Ville. He has been an activist in Haiti. I first met him in Haiti when I was living there. Oh, gosh, it's been two decades now, right, Jean?
Absolutely.
It's been a while. And he's a great person. I want to start out with today to sort of talk about the bigger situation, the bigger picture in Haiti. As you heard me read earlier, James B. Foley, the former U.S. ambassador to Haiti, 2003 to 2005, during the 2004 coup, a man whose hands are bloodied, is now calling on President Trump for U.S. military intervention to be followed up by U.S. military contractors, a.k.a. mercenaries. Jean, let's start there. Let's talk a little bit about this call by James Foley to intervene militarily for the U.S., for Trump and the U.S. to intervene militarily in Haiti.
Yeah, well, yes. Thanks for having me again, Kevin, and for keeping doing the good work that you do on the unfolding situation in Haiti. Those voices are very important. James B. Foley is one of those individuals, I say, that you cannot just ignore what he puts out there, especially when his opinion piece came out the same day that an equivalent one came in Canada in the Globe and Mail, you know, calling for Justin Trudeau and his Liberal Party to also intervene in Haiti. So to me, this is a coordinated message by the coup folks who dismantled the Haitian state. And what is important with regards to James B. Foley being very disingenuous, talking as if, you know, the Americans are not already too engaged and that he's calling for them to be engaged, is that he actually entered Haiti in 2003 precisely to implement the coup. Mm-hmm. And I recall the article by Michel Chossudovsky, which came out on the day of the coup, and basically he was predicting that Foley's expertise is precisely that kind of dismantling of states, that he's coming from Kosovo, where basically he was there with the U.S., basically working with the terrorists there, in that once they overthrow the government, then the criminals are going to be transformed into political actors, etc. And that's what was happening with Guy Philippe, who was their assets, and that they turned into a political player with the FLRN. So this is telling me that there are some very desperate people who want to confirm Haiti as a U.S. colony. But of course, as a project of a coalition of white supremacist forces, not just the U.S., the U.S., Canada, European Union, as they are assembled within this ridiculous neocolonial club that they call the core group. And so these messages definitely need to be answered. And I'm glad that I saw a piece by the Haiti Information Project that, you know, alerted people to the fact that, you know, who James B. Foley is.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and that's the voice of our guest, Jean St. Ville. He's coming to us from Montreal, Canada. We're talking about how there's another call by one of the supporters of the 2004 coup under the Bush administration, George W. Bush, to have Trump commit Marines. And then I was really surprised by this call to then have U.S. military contractors. You know what? Of course, that means they would be paid by the U.S. So there's some economic advantage to that for people like Eric D. Prince, right, who the former head of Blackwater. I forget what he's renamed his company to, Whitewash. What he's called, Blanchiment, his name. But I thought it was interesting that they were going to call for U.S. mercenaries as well. What do you think of that?
Well, it's not new. As you recall, back in 2022, so 2 years ago, around August, this was the message that Pamela White, another former U.S. ambassador, was putting out there. And, you know, she was saying that, you know, forget about this idea of a Haitian solution. You know, this is some kind of romantic thing. You know, we need to just go out there and take over the country. And she was calling for mercenaries. She used the term. She said, you know, people with weapons need to take over Haiti. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, former New York police officers, UN troops, mercenaries. And it's after that, like I said, again, there's always a tandem. Pamela White's op-eds started coming out in the US and in the Caribbean newspapers. At the same time in Canada, again in the Globe and Mail, Robert Rodberg, which is one of those guys who have what they call the think pieces, think tanks in Canada, right-wing folks, started calling for Paul Kagame of Rwanda to actually lead the mercenaries that the United States and Canada would mobilize to go to Haiti to do the job for them. And Kagame ended up going to a meeting in CARICOM, like in the Caribbean. But eventually it was the other African fool who works for the white supremacist forces, William Ruto of Kenya, you know, who jumped higher saying, me, you know, let me lead the intervention in Haiti. And of course, all kinds of deals were being arranged. But the formula has always been that they want to use mercenaries, and they went to do it in the cheap. William Ruto is notorious for that. Like, he just ships Kenyans right, left, and center for the armies of the white supremacist forces, whether it is the UK or the United States. So in the case of Haiti, they promised these guys all kinds of salary advantages. And apparently they must have made some deals with them that, you know, it's going to be a show. You're not really going to be in harm's way, because when they went to Haiti, after all of this talk saying that it was going to be, you know, a couple of thousands, there's only 400. They apparently there are problems mobilizing funds to pay their salaries. And when they got there, the Haitians were saying, where are the Kenyans? And the first images we saw of them was in front of the U.S. Embassy, like the most secure place in Haiti, okay? Like the last place that needs protection. Well, so some Haitian activists were saying all along that it absolutely makes no sense that the United States, Canada, European Union, who dismantled the Haitian state, conducted this coup, put the criminals in power, essentially created the situation where the country is currently overrun by terrorists, U.S. armed terrorists, would also be the ones who will, you know, spend their money to undo what they have done. For folks who might not be aware of it, we are actually in the 20th anniversary of the takeover of Haiti. So when Kevin mentioned the coup of February 29th, 2004, it needs to be understood that this was a collective crime. If you Google the Ottawa Initiative on Haiti, you will find much information about this meeting that was held in the city where I live, in Ottawa, Gatineau, capital of Canada. According to Trump, it's the 52nd state of the U.S. But in any ways, it's not far-fetched. The United States wanted to conduct this coup. The French had their own reasons, because the president of Haiti was clamoring for reparations and restitution. And so the three white cousins came together, Canada, the United States, and France, and they conspired to overthrow the government of Haiti. And 13 months later, they entered the residence of the president, kidnapped him and his wife, and toppled 7,000 elected officials. So the eve of the coup, Haiti had 7,000 elected officials, from local representatives, mayors, all the way to a fully functional parliament with senators, deputies, and the president. Now you have zero. All of the folks that are, you know, playing office of head of state or head of government in Haiti have been appointed outside of the provisions of the Haitian constitution. And this is exactly how they want it. That's what happened when the U.S. invaded in 1915. They disregarded the Haitian constitution, created their own stuff, wrote their own constitution, and apparently that's what they're working on right now.
Okay, let me play a little devil's advocate here, because, you know, I speak to people on the ground often to get my information. I try to stay informed. There is a sentiment that in the last couple weeks, 3-4 weeks, that the Kenyans have actually left their base. You know, we saw footage of them actually going into barbecue. Jimmy Sherry's there. Barbecue, the former cop who was closely aligned with Michel Martelly and with Jovenel Moïse, who, when his paymaster mm-hmm. was killed, suddenly released on the population. You know, Freemason, if you will. A freelancer, Freemason. And so we saw them go in with armored vehicles. We saw them attack directly that base in Delma II. And now, of course, they've taken over and established a base in Delma VI, not too far away. It's kept barbecue off base enough. We haven't heard anything from him for a couple weeks now. There's lots of speculation what happened to him. And of course, in the last, since 2 weeks ago, when there were those huge massacres by Mikano in Cité Soleil, by other factions of Vivant Somme in Delma 19 and Delma 19, and we also saw what was going on in Savienne, we've since seen what's appeared to be a more direct response of the PNH, the Haitian National Police, backed up by the Kenyans just recently. Would you agree with that, or how would you analyze that?
No, absolutely. And I would say this is not a coincidence or something magic. What happened is that Joe Biden lost the election, or Kamala Harris in the United States. And so the Democrats who have been backing up the PHTK criminal regime are busy right now. Some of these guys are, you know, covering their own behinds because Donald Trump is coming to office in January. So this offered a window for people in Haiti who actually want to fight the criminals to give directives to the police so that they can attack the criminals, the PHTK criminals. What was happening before that is that Gary Conille, who was appointed prime minister, was more inclined to protect the terrorist, because like you said, Jimmy Cherizier barbecues Vive Ensemble group or G9 criminals were always aligned with the U.S. agenda, with the PHTK agenda. And of course, you know, any police action against him would fail because they had insider information as to where the police is going to be coming up. What happened is that for all of its problems with, you know, this transition government that they've cooked up with, you know, all kinds of problematic arrangements, you know, nine people, Haitians call it the nine-headed monsters, and because it has a representative of all of the political parties, including PHTK, the criminals themselves. But what happened is that through some, I guess, you know, a hazard, I would say, you know, of history, the Lavalas person who was supposed to be third in that rotation of head of that transitional council got moved to second. And so Leslie Voltaire became head of this thing, I believe, in October, I believe. And so this is the change. And Voltaire and Lavalas, knowing full well that Barbecue's Vivasam group are targeting the Lavalas bases in Bel Air, in Solino, in Kafoufei, they're targeting him, and they've given directives. And indeed, even the Kenyans are now, you know, reporting that they have been involved in some of the efforts to unseat the terrorist, the U.S. armed terrorist. Now, they have to be quick about it because during this transition of power in the United States, I believe that the State Department folks are too busy to go and mess up things in Haiti. And so if they have to, you know, make a shift, that's where it needs to happen. Unfortunately, what I don't see happening is any move to arrest some of the notorious criminals. I'm talking about Michel Martelly, who is in Miami, although there have been numerous reports, including from the UN, which confirm that Michel Martelly has been the key person to create support and arm the terrorist, whether it is Baz de Sassé Kanset or Baz Pilat and many others. He's living free in Miami. There's, as far as I know, no effort to arrest him. The other warlord is Gilbert Bidjo, who is reported to control 50% of the Haitian economy, is also in Miami free. And I don't think you can make a serious change in Haiti unless at least one of these two main players are neutralized, because their power of nuisance is just way too high for any progressive Haitian government.
Well, I would add to that list, Laurent Lamont.
Laurent Lamont, Reynald Deeb. It's a long
list.
Yeah,
it's a long list, right? And yeah. These guys are known to be the ones who were behind the coup d'etat of 2004, the coup. You know, these are yeah. the guys who the U.S. were throwing it for, the U.S., France, and Canada were throwing it for, because that was their trusted allies on the ground, because they controlled the economy. And they've always been corrupt, and they've always used political violence to stay in power behind the scenes. And so, but how can you even get to that real work? Because let's face it, the people who always were behind backing real change were the people that you listed. The base populaire in those neighborhoods that are now under attack, have been under constant attack by the Vivre Ensemble gang coalition. So it's almost as if you can't even really get to the real work of really changing Haiti until you deal with that question first, right? Then, because all it's doing is forestalling this question of what the heck does Haiti do with all of those criminals that they know have been behind the coup d'etats, who've controlled Haiti's economy, who are the source of instability, real source of political instability in Haiti.
Yeah, and that's why the work of PHTK has been systematic in terms of dismantling the
state. And that's Michel Martelly's party.
Their main targets has been the judicial system. So essentially their argument is that, well, there is not a working judiciary, therefore you cannot judge us. And so the Petro-Caribe trials have not taken place. And it's kind of like a circular logic. But, you know, you remember Jovenel Moïse, the former puppet president, claiming that he was forced. He didn't say by whom, but we can all know that it was by the Michel Martelly clan of PHTK to name or to appoint 50 corrupt judges.
Right.
So you're the president, and you complaining about the fact that they're forcing you to name 50. Who are these they who are forcing you when you are the so-called president? Of course, what they were doing is to discredit the judicial system and then use that as an excuse as to why people they catch doing all kinds of crimes cannot be judged in Haiti. And that's where you had a ridiculous situation where a so-called president of Haiti is murdered in his house. And it's the FBI, the U.S. government, that enters Haiti to conduct the investigation, you know, handpick who he wants to take to the United States. And they put all kinds of gag orders on judges saying that there is a U.S. Security situations to be protected. That's why they cannot release all of the information about what's happening. The fact is, the United States participated in silencing Jovenel Moïse, and the speculation out there is that this was done in cahoots with Michel Martelly. And so there's all kinds of indication that the current mess that we observe in Haiti is the doing of the U.S. administration, chiefly the Democrats, in coalition with the Canadians and the core group that have been running the show since 2004. And they don't want to carry the blame for the mess that they've created. And now they're hoping that somehow they can put the whole thing on the back of Haitian incompetence, you know? And that's why they've created this impossible arrangement of a transition, when in fact Haiti has a tradition of some of these transitions that have worked in the past, where you basically have a junta of three people. Even at the time of the militaries, they use, you know, you have three people to do a transition, to organize an election, to like, you don't need nine fools who are getting paid all kinds of money and privileges, and they're coming from different party. So it's a recipe for disaster. And it seems like nothing was left to chances. It's like they've basically prepared a disaster, and the military intervention is now being presented as something that is inevitable because of the chaos that has been created. Something very practical and logical is not even being discussed. That is the United States stopping the flow of all of these weapons from Miami to Haiti, which is something that is completely feasible, but they don't want to do that.
All right, well, we're going to have to leave it there. Again, that's the voice of my guest, Jean Sainville. And I mistakenly said Montreal earlier. Yes, indeed, Ottawa, Gatineau. Just saw you there a couple months ago. It was great seeing you.
Exactly.
And always a pleasure to have you here. And we're going to have you on again soon, John. Thank you so much for joining us here today on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Likewise, Kevin. Thanks.
And let's go ahead and let's take a short break here. When we get back, we'll feature another clandestine interview from deep in the heart of Port-au-Prince, Haiti's capital. Stay tuned for that and more here on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Nan point mot, nan point discours, nan point pièce de dommagement, nan point support ni réconfort, nan point pièce virgo l'agent, nan point assistance sociale qui ka séché de l'eau nan j'ai famille ça. Yon question l'état haïtien, côté ou barri ak vie famille ça. De tout plan qui pral donné, ça ne pas penser ak fiti, an nou pas besoin moun qui préparé, c'est ça fait jeune yo ap victime, ou ba yo l'école sans colonne vertébrale, yo goumé yo met bras, ou ba yo éducation sans atemi yo. Yo goumen yo medra, m'pa pale paske m'proche, même sentim te ka nan plasa. Haïti kap manje jeune avec ki dam te ka nan plasa. Yo re grand goût pou paye camionnette ak fè photocopie papier. Ki so pral fèk pou soulager parol, kap gade l ki pralé. Kwa di, li pa répond nou seulement en baquet, comme li fè philo. Nou voye l'al fè université l'embaté. Li jeune li gen avenir mais nous fait ak la ville coupé fâché nous pas de besoin touyel pour l'argent m'rete kwè nous pelacé pas gen habit qui pour souffler malgré sou nous yo pe de fè falta mais Doval Grégory Vladimir prend gol yo chute Evelyn sou fatra Haïti pays spécial bandi gen pouvoir passé chef volé gen passé maître l'état kap manger jeune passé bête relé mra pendant parent n'ap goumé pour préparer avenir. L'État fait plan pour détruire la ville. Si gon moun nan génération sa ki pa fini mal, semble se sak pati ou. Socrate encore.
And now we're going back to Haiti on the ground, where of course there have been innumerable things going on. 2 weeks ago, there were several massacres. One really outrageous, where more than 200 people were killed in Wavjiami, an area of Cité Soleil. Another in the area of Delma 19, and there was also a massacre in an area called Savien, which is in La Tibonite, which is up north where there's a lot of food that's grown in Haiti. It's known as Haiti's breadbasket. We're now joined by someone on the ground. We're going to keep his identity anonymous in order to keep him protected given the situation there. Welcome back to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Hi, Kevin.
Well, listen, let's start with a what was the reaction to I guess it was 2 weeks ago, or was it a week ago? It's hard to tell because there's so much that goes on so quickly in Haiti, that there was that huge massacre by Mikanol in Cité Soleil and Wavjiami.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago. But the thing is, since this area is, it's the people in the neighborhood, in this neighborhood nearby Cité Soleil that stayed there. And so it took people sometimes to realize what happened, because we've heard some information that were not precise in the radio concerning the amount of people that were killed and the reason. So it took us like a weekend to realize what actually happened there, and it was a shock for everybody, knowing that amount of people was killed, and it seems that a lot of them were, let's say, in Creole they say Tigramun. They were older people, and people that lived in their neighborhood for quite a long time. And the head of the gang, which is Mikanor, he had a son that is sick. And you know, in the, let's say, in the voodoo culture. And excuse me, because some of the people from Bovudu said that this is not a part of voodoo, you know, that the people are killing people, it's something apart, but that culturally, you know, it's probably a voodoo priest that informed him that his son was cursed by one on another, what they call a Wugan, another voodoo priest. And generally, because these days you've been seeing young people being priests of voodoo, but generally they are elder people, you know, this is why he target a lot of elder people and massacre them. And we even have some information because we saw some bodies, but comparing with the amount of victim, they said that they took away some of them and they massacred them in, you know, a part of the neighborhood in some particular place where, you know, people could not reach to observe. So this is why in the news we saw that they were disposing of some bodies that were, you know, in some houses, but most of them, it seems that they took them to other places in order to execute them. And even there are some rumors saying that they used them as sacrifice. So as I told you previously, it was a shock for everybody because this neighborhood is the neighborhood of the gang. So for them to attack, because generally they don't attack people in their immediate surrounding. So that was one of the shocking points. They said Vivre Ensemble had reacted and saying that since, you know, we could, you know, the news or people that giving information could not show the body because there was between 189 and 200 people that were killed, but since this wasn't, we didn't have any evidence of that amount, so they sort of, many gang leaders sort of pronouncing themselves into that and arguing that is the press that is providing disinformation.
Well, listen, you know, we know that this is not the first massacre that Mikanor has done in Wolf Jiami. 2 years ago, there were 20 people who were murdered by Mikanor and his gang. And also, I've seen footage of barbecue partying with Mikanor at Wolf Jiami not too long ago. So Mikanor is part of the Vivre Ensemble gang coalition, right?
Yes, this is confirmed. And it's confirmed by them, by the other members.
You know, there are also people who believe that's just a cover and that really it's about putting down the resistance in Cité Soleil, because it's true that Cité Soleil was once the bastion of La Valace and where many of the protests against the coup of 2004 and against Michel Martelly and against Jovenel Moïse and against the corruption of Petrocaribe, the absconding and corruption of stealing funds from the Petrocaribe program, a lot of those demonstrations came from Cité Soleil as well.
That's one of the possibilities, you know, because with what's going on there internally, you know, that among the gang, at a certain point they were not together, and now that they put themselves, you know, together with Vivian Sam. So that might have some influences, you know, they might be influences by other political group that could push them in that direction. I just can say that it's something that it's possible, but we cannot confirm it.
But isn't it true that most of the neighborhoods that are occupied by Vivre Ensemble in the capital are those areas where there was strong Lavala support? And of course, no one can demonstrate now. No one can protest. There can't be manifestation or rassemblement, you know, the gatherings that they would do for protests. It can't happen in La Saline. It can't happen in Cité Soleil. It can't happen in Solino, Nazon, those neighborhoods that traditionally were launching sites for the base, Baz Lavalas, the Lavalas base.
Historically, we could say yes. Yeah, because it's all those people, you know, in this neighborhood nearby Cité Soleil and Delma 2, you know, and also even if you go further down Grand Ravine to the south, Grand Ravine, Bel Air, you know, these historically were the base, you know, of support of Lavalas.
And so, do you think that it's true that if, you know that Jimmy Cherizaire and Vivre Ensemble have called what they're doing a revolution, right? And don't you think that if the people in those neighborhoods thought that it was a revolution and they thought that it was something good for Haiti, they would be in the streets supporting them rather than resisting them being killed in their homes, their houses burned, and then being forced to relocate?
You're absolutely right. They would provide them their complete support. And you see now, since this area, particularly where Mikano is, the police doesn't have too much access. But in the area where police have access, now you see that the population is just giving their support to the police to track the gangs. If they believe that they were doing a revolution, they were working for them, they would have been together with them. And I must clarify something for you. In most of the neighborhood where the leader of the gang lives, they normally take care of all people in their direct surrounding. So they only have the support of those people in the near area of their base. But after that, you know, some other people, they stayed in this neighborhood because they don't have no choice. They don't have any possibility to go elsewhere in order to, they cannot afford renting house at another level, you know, so they are forced to stay. They don't have the support because Mikana made a demonstration where you saw he had some people behind him, but this is not the expression of support. They might have been pressured, you know, to participate in this demonstration.
So Mikano staged a demonstration after the massacre?
Yes, he did one after the massacre to show that first the population is with them and what he did was justified, and saying that the amount of people that was killed was not accurate.
And let me remind our listeners, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and that's the voice of my guest, a clandestine interview from Haiti's capital. Now, I understand that in the last 2 weeks, we've also seen what I've heard the Haitian press describe as a muscular response to Vivre Ensemble and the gangs. We haven't heard from Barbecue, Jimmy Cherizaire, the former cop who's the porte-parole, the spokesperson for Vivre Ensemble for nearly 3 weeks. There's a lot of speculation about where he may be or what's happened to him. But is it true that now we're seeing a sort of turning point where the police are actually engaging with the back of the Kenyan troops, the so-called MSSM, the multinational security contingent, that we're actually seeing them take on the gangs in a much more offensive way than we've seen in the past?
Yes, we could say so. Comparing to what they've been doing, you know, they are being more aggressive. They are being more Persistent and some gang member, because they claim, and we saw the picture in some social media where they confirm killing some lieutenant of barbecue. And in the Savia area, they killed 16, you know. So they are having better result in terms of eliminating. But in terms of really stopping them, it seems that they are not at this point. They are being more aggressive. For instance, particularly in Port-au-Prince, which situation is creating a lot of traffic, because they surround the area, all the neighborhoods that surround Solino and Nazon on the south and on the north. You have police and the MSS that making penetrations, and sometimes they kill one or two of them. But they haven't reached a point where you could see that eventually in the coming few days that they would take control of these areas. And Barbecue is hiding, but he's having an access on TikTok. I forgot which social media that he had an access where he's talking, you know, and showing. He's saying that he's in his home in Delma 6, but we cannot confirm.
Well, those TikTok videos were from 3 weeks ago. No one's heard from him in 3 weeks, honestly. I checked his TikTok channel. There's been nothing new from there. I mean, the last thing that we saw was an interview he did with Krisla, another gang leader associated with the Vivre Ensemble gang coalition, where he spoke about how Barbecue was sanctioned and all he wanted him, he was controlling what he was saying, and all he wanted him to do was to give a salute to people who were watching and wouldn't let him say any more. But I believe from what I've been myself about, there's been monitoring that social media channels, he's not been heard of in 3 weeks. But I've also heard that there's been some speculation that he may be injured, but we don't have anything to confirm that, do we?
Yeah, but the thing is, obviously he might be hiding, because he's not showing himself the same way that he used to do. And even if you hear a voice or a video, sometimes when they make the live, you see they show something that was done, you know, a month ago. It's clear that he's probably in hiding.
What do you think about this whole concept of trying to pass him off as a revolutionary?
I think that it's a cover, you know. It's the way that the situation turned against them, and that they are showing themselves as, let's say, revolutionary. And I can say that Barbecue started that earlier, you know, when there were these two big associations. You know, he was out of the G9, you know. So I think it's a cover-up, because the real thing is, since now they see that people that were financing them on the political side and on the side of the private sector, you know, the businessmen, now they want to get the support of the population in order to intimidate those forces, or let's say those sectors, you know. But it's clearly that they want a peaceful of it, you know, since the idea was for them to, when they made the proposition while the Ariel Henry was there, so they wanted to have a peaceful way of getting out of the situation, and in order to enjoy the money that they have made out of all those killings, you know, and other criminal activities that they've been making. But now they are trying to make it look like a revolution. If they were doing it, I thought they would not be attacking, you know, the same, the base, all the base of the people in their own base, the population that is already struggling, you know, in difficult situation. They would not make them move them, you know, burn their houses, you know, make them move to other places. For me, you know, observing it, it's evident that it's not a revolution, because a revolution usually starts, you know, in the base, you know, and it's done for the people. Now they want to make a revolution for themselves, but not for the people.
That raises the question, do you think that there's any possibility of offering these guys amnesty at this point, given the level of killings that happened over the last few months?
While Ariel Henry was there, it seems that they tried. You know, on the government side, there's the BNU. It seems that they submitted something to the BNU. But for the current government, the opposition, and for the previous one, Gary Kony, they don't want to negotiate with them, and they don't want to negotiate. Think that they would be considering going through that process to provide them amnesty.
And what about the people? Do you think the majority of the population would support amnesty at this point?
At this point, no. At this point, no. And this is why they are being so violent, because since it's like, I don't know, I'm not a psychiatrist, but I think, you know, the way that you see, if you hear of the, when they talk about Brak Ali, if you see the rage that those people have when they find all those gang killing them, mutilating them, burning them, and they don't even take consideration if they are grown up or kids. So I think it's like, if I could say it, so the population is really traumatized by those gangs. You know, so it's, I don't think that for the majority, you know, because they have made people suffer on different level, you know, of the population, you know, particularly in the base. At the end, they started to kidnap some wealthy people, you know, something for politicians. But after that, it's the people, it's, you know, in their own neighborhood, people with low income, people who are already suffering, you know, and they take any amount that they can from them. And on the street, you know, they are making, you know, all those, you are in our public transport, they are taking money out of them, they are burning and moving the small people that have small businesses. At this point, I don't think that they would get any support from the population.
Now, you mentioned Brak Ali. Explain to our listeners exactly what is the Brak Ali movement.
The Brak Ali movement, they call them in the UN report, when they were trying to identify the gang, they also identified some group that they define as self-defense. In a reaction to the gang, some neighborhoods, they have the population organize themselves in a group of people that are doing surveillance, you know, and there's a new phenomenon that you see on the street, even in, you know, in a lot of areas such as Jujo, Canapével, you know, it all starts there because they are barricading the street, you know, at night. So whenever they catch somebody who cannot identify himself, okay, if somebody gets in their neighborhood and they cannot identify who you are, they cannot identify who you are going to visit, you cannot prove them that you are going to visit somebody, you cannot contact that person, and they cannot have that proof, they kill you and they burn you. And if there's a police operation and the gang has been wounded, sometimes the police just throw the gang to the people and they finish with they kill him and they burn him. So the Brak Ali, they kill you and they burn you.
But it's aimed at the gangs.
Yeah, the gangs. Yeah.
And really, minor listeners, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and that's one of my guests coming to you clandestinely. It's a clandestine interview from deep in the heart of Port-au-Prince, which is said to be 80% controlled by gangs. Is that still true? Are we talking about 80% at this point? Is it more, 90%? Is it less since this last few weeks of what seems to be some success by the police?
The police have killed some of them, but they haven't got the control of the area that the gangs have control. So it's more than, for me, it's like, if it was 80%, it's 85%, considering Solino and the large part Solino, Nazon, and I think that they have more control physically, but the police have not reached the point where they take control of a part of area that gang controlled before.
So do you think that the people have confidence that the police can do this on their own? Or, you know, there are recent calls by the former U.S. Ambassador James B. Foley yesterday in an editorial opinion piece in the Miami Herald, where he called upon Trump to intervene militarily with a small contingent of U.S. Marines to be followed up with U.S. mercenaries, U.S. private contractors. Do you think the police can do it on their own, or do you think that James B. Foley's call for Trump to intervene with U.S. troops and U.S. mercenaries is legitimate?
From where he's standing, they might see that, but on the ground, we think that, normally the police are capable of doing it if they have, for instance, necessary material. But for the police, we have another problem. So they are capable of fixing the problem, but they have internal weakness that are not allow them to be as to effectively do it, you know, because they have internally, they have some problem that I'm not going to go through right now with you. That is their problem, because normally they know the neighborhoods, and if they have the proper material and support, they can do them. But if they are not able to do it, it's because internally they have some problem that have to be addressed, that have to be fixed so they could do it.
So things have been really tough. It can't be easy day-to-day living under these conditions. You know, just getting food for your family, getting water, you know, the basic staples that you need to live. You know, walking out of your house has to be a bit stressful every time you do it. You know, what is that like today, you know, in the streets? Is it still hard? Is it getting better?
No, it's not getting better at all. It's a luxury to eat right now. And you have many people that lost their job, you know, with the current situation, that were helping other, you know, that were member and that were helping other members of the family, you know. So this is, this is why I think that I thought that report that made that around 5 million of the population, I forgot the precise term that they use.
Food insecurity?
Yeah, in food insecurity. That's the, yeah. So it's getting worse, you know. And with the port that is closed, the port in Port-au-Prince, you know, and it's very difficult to make, you know, sometimes they go from Cap Haitien, but if they go to Cap Haitien, they have to reach the West Department through the road, and you know what's going on in the road. They have to pay. So, and if then they, when they got through, you know, the price is gonna be very high, because they paid. They have to pay a lot for the goods to come in Port-au-Prince, medicine and everything. In that part, you know, it's day by day. It's getting worse.
And so, but when you have to leave your house to buy what you can, it's pretty frightening, isn't it? It's not an easy thing to do. Take your kids to school, or, you know, just walk around. You can't do that anymore.
No, you can't do it because you're, you know, it's an obligation. But when you go out, there's nothing that can reassure you that, you know, you won't take a, I don't know, because there's this, sometimes when they make the police make the operation to stop or to make penetration in some gang area, since those guys are using war guns, you know, So, you know, people can walk in a street, you know, street miles from there and get hit by bullets, and sometimes even in their house. So this is why, you know, mentally, when you are, you know, in, let's say, when you go out, you have all these things in your mind, you know, that you can receive one of these bullets, you know, in any area where you on the street. In, you know, even if you're in your house, if it's something that is close to the area where they're making the operation, you know, so this is scary. It's putting you in a mental state where you have, or you need to fight with being scared. You know, you have that idea, you know, that if you go, this might happen to you, but you go since it's necessary. It's necessary to go to get food or to get medicine, to bring the kids to school, you know. You do it, but you are kind of scared, you know, and you are not in a good mental mood.
All right, well, we're going to leave it there again. That is the voice of my guest who's speaking to us in a clandestine interview from the heart of Haiti's capital, Port-au-Prince. We've been discussing the situation with gangs, the situation with the police, and what life is like on a day-to-day basis under those conditions. Thank you so much for joining us today here on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
Okay, you're welcome, Karen.
Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO Portland, Oregon.
Are you ready for another year of grassroots community radio? With your support, it's possible. So go to kboo.fm/give or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon.